This is the American Ag Network Week in Review. In the show today, Rusty Halvorsen gets us caught up on the week's top news.
This past week, we visited with Jim Hedges, Vice President of Seed for Winfield United, about a new collaboration with the Climate Corporation. We're visiting with Jim Hedges, Vice President of Seed for Winfield United. And Jim, really enjoyed talking to you not long ago. How are things going today?
Oh, things are going great. I'm sitting here in central Illinois, and we've got a nice little rain shower coming through. Corn's all pollinated, so feeling pretty good.
Okay, good deal. Well, we're going to visit today about a new collaboration between Winfield United and Climate Field View, the Answer Tech Data Silo. Can you tell us a little, Jim, about that collaboration?
Yeah, so, Rusty, let me start with what the data silo is. A data silo is really a hub that houses data. And that data can be accessed by a farmer. So the grower has his choice if he wants to have FieldView connected to, say, our R7 suite of tools. And if he does, all of a sudden, Data Silo can aggregate that data, and then we can move it back and forth. And what I love about the idea is right now, it's all about duplicative entry, right? You have to go put all your data into Climate Field View. You have to put all your data into R7. This would allow those field boundaries and everything to just pass back and forth. And as we think about in-season management, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, so what we're talking about more is data integration, and obviously saves you time and perhaps increases profitability if you can make use of that data.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, the time savings is really good, and I think that actually will help people use both sets of tools more often. But what really excites me about it is now we'll have the ability through our locally owned retailers to have as planted data through Climate Field View come into Data Silo and then feed our R7 tool and field forecasting tool. And we'll understand, okay, this hybrid has a high response to nitrogen, or this hybrid has a high response to fungicide, those types of things. So as the environmental conditions give opportunities or challenges, you can really manage down to the hybrid level. And then you can go to the harvest side, back to Climate Field View, and look at the analytics. What did it work, and was it a profitable decision? So for me, you know, one of the things we really try to work at Winfield United is predictable, probable return on investment through the right decisions at the right time. So I think it'll help growers invest the right dollars on the right input in season, ultimately.
Okay. Now, the collaboration was recently announced. Is there time that growers can get things set up for this season to monitor what they have for the 2020 growing season in preparation for what they may plan for the 2021 growing season? How's a farmer go about getting set up for this, Jim?
Well, the integration is ongoing, so we're connecting the APIs as we speak. So it's a 2021 event, so they won't be able to do it right at this moment, but we expect to be able to utilize this in 2021.
Okay, sounds good. And I understand you're also partnering with Microsoft. What do you got going on there, Jim?
Well, so Microsoft, that's a Land of Lakes partnership.
Okay.
And, of course, Winfield United is a part of Land of Lakes. But going back to Data Silo, I'll just talk about implications and opportunities within Winfield United. Data Silo is housed on top of Azure, which is a Microsoft platform. So what it allows us to do is, as we think about having that open architecture of connecting different tools, it gives us much more capacity to connect, you know, not only Climate Field View, but other technology tools as well as business tools. So, you know, some of the basically ERPs that farmers use could potentially be connected, and that gives us the ability to do that. From the Land O'Lakes perspective, a lot of it is around rural America and broadband access and those types of things. So it's exciting to be partnered with them. And, you know, at the same time, I think it actually makes the climate integration even better in the future. It'll make it faster and smoother.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, I think we pretty much covered it, Jim, unless there's anything else you'd like to add. Otherwise, the corn looking good in your neck of the woods there in Illinois?
It does. So I walked a little bit of it last Saturday. Now, it took our corn about 5 weeks to come up, and I'm not telling you anything. I mean, that's probably normal. But yeah. For us, that's a long time. And, the only issue we have is there's some uneven corn out there. So you've got some fully pollinated and some still pollinating, but it looks really, really good. I mean, it's not going to be a record crop, but it's going to be really good.
We also visited with Emily Metz, president and CEO of the American Egg Board, about dietary guidelines recommending eggs as first food for young individuals from birth to 2 years old. Well, the reason we're visiting, news out recently, for the first time in history of the U.S.'s guidance on what to eat for health, guidelines include recommendations for individuals from birth to 2 years old. And there were some guidelines that were announced that good news for the nation's egg producers.
That's right. Last week was a pretty phenomenal week for our nation's egg farmers. You know, the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, which is a committee of our nation's doctors, medical professionals, and nutrition scientists, they released their official report, and something historic happened last week, Rusty. For the first time ever, they made recommendations for feeding for children for birth to 2 years, and they officially and specifically recommended eggs as a first food for babies and an important food for toddlers and pregnant women. And that was obviously very exciting for us at the American Egg Board and for our nation's egg farmers.
There are nutrients in eggs that have been established to be very good for early health in small children. Could you go over some of those nutrients that are so beneficial that are in eggs?
That's right. Well, eggs provide a pretty nutritional powerhouse. They have 8 essential nutrients for only 70 calories. But one nutrient in particular that the committee really focused on that many Americans haven't heard of is choline. And I think it's not surprising people haven't heard of it because they're not getting enough of it. And so the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee really called out choline and recommended eggs because it's a perfectly wholesome and complete source of choline. Just 2 eggs a day gets you that recommended daily dose, and it's really critical. And choline is very important for brain development, so that's why they're specifically recommending eggs for toddlers and for pregnant women, is it helps with that brain development in utero and can really contribute helping that brain development at every stage, even as we age. There's a lot of studies that show that choline can help prevent cognitive decline. So as we get older, we need all the help we can get, and eggs can help you get there and prevent memory loss and really keep your mind sharp.
And from what I've read, it's difficult to achieve the daily adequate intake level for choline without eating eggs or taking a dietary supplement. So if it was up to me, I'd rather eat the eggs, to be honest with you.
Me too. You know, we talk about eggs being a multivitamin in a shell. Most women, like I said, most Americans aren't getting enough choline, but women in particular, over 92% of women fall far short of that daily recommended intake of choline, and it's a pretty easy fix. Just eat some eggs. I wanted to share today is WEGS Day, which means Wednesday is WEGS Day. So in the middle of the week, you should be thinking about eggs for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And all the more reason now with that choline and that recommendation from the Dietary Guidelines Committee.
Okay. For the consumers that hear this story, where can they go for additional information, just to look up some of the things we've been visiting about today? Is there a good resource online, Emily?
There's a great resource. So our eggnutritioncenter.org has a great information from nutritionists, but it also has a lot of recipes. You know, we recently did a study with the National Peanut Board about allergies and how to reduce allergies with early introduction, which is something that Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee also recommended. So there's a ton of recipes there for how to get eggs into those littlest consumers. So be sure to visit eggnutritioncenter.org for those tips.
Okay, perfect, Emily. Is there anything else you'd like to add to wrap up? I think we've covered the story well, and congratulations on the new guidelines.
Oh, thanks. It's really impactful for us. And like I said, it's our job now to share this news far and wide and to make sure, you know, we're there meeting consumers with recipes. More consumers than ever before are cooking at home. And so it's our job to give them some new innovative ideas for how to use up those eggs. And right now, especially, Rusty, when people are worried about their paychecks and their budgets, eggs are not only that nutritional powerhouse, but they're also incredible value. So you're getting a lot of protein for your money, and there's so many things you can do with an egg. That's why it's incredible.
We also got an update on this past week's export sales report for corn and soybeans with Mark Lucas, risk management consultant with StoneX. We are visiting on a Thursday around mid-session. As I look at the corn futures, subdued activity, only fractional changes as you and I visit. But we were talking off mic a moment ago about a big sale of corn from the U.S. to China, 1.937 million metric tons. Can you put that number into perspective for us, Mark?
Yeah, you know, a couple weeks ago we had a sale to China, 1.7 million metric tons, and that's about, to put it in our terms, 69 million bushels, something like that. And that was like an all-time record sale to China since, you know, we've been keeping records on this type of thing. And this week's number, shortly after the weekly export sales numbers came out, the USDA popped out saying that you know, there was another big sale to China, and certainly caught the market off guard, and wasn't really looking for that this morning. So, it's somewhere around 76 million bushels, something like that. I apologize, about 76 million bushels, and there was also a small amount of corn sold to unknown. So you add that into it, which is probably China as well. It's over 2 million metric tons of corn sales in one day for the new crop. So a very big one day sale. But you try and put it into perspective. It's like, okay, what's China doing here? China's got some fairly large state owned corn reserves that they try to use, they to stabilize their market, and they try to control the flow to keep prices high enough to support their farmers and that kind of thing. And really what they're doing is they've been each week selling about 4 million metric tons out of that reserve. At the rate they've been going, that reserve will be eaten up probably by the end of August if they keep selling. Because each week, like this last week, the 4 million metric tons they put in the auction was completely purchased. And the price is somewhere around, in our term, $7.30 a bushel, something like that. And so they're coming over here, purchasing corn, add on the freight. They're buying corn somewhere around maybe just shy of $2 a bushel cheaper than they're selling their own domestic corn out. So it's a way for them to restock, resupply, refill the inventory in China with better U.S. corn, because there's a lot of question about, you know, the quality of their reserve corn that they've had on hand for some time. And also do it at a cheaper level at multi-year lows in terms of what we're seeing in the U.S. here. So it's, you know, it's a looks like a smart play on their part. They don't want to over import, you know, they don't want to do too much and break the price. They want to, that's the way they support their domestic farmers, is they want to keep it, you know, kind of the number that you hear battered around is that, you know, they want to keep prices above like $6.50 a bushel to help support their farmers. So this is just kind of their mechanism of doing it. So it's a, The problem is we don't know how much of this reserve they want to replace in right now. And, you know, you hear numbers thrown around, and this was 2 million metric tons this week, and the other couple weeks ago was 1.7. Then you've got the purchases that they've made out of Brazil, and that sounds like they're going to be planning on making here out of Brazil this winter. So 10 million metric tons maybe is a number that's being tossed around. So it's kind of a bright spot for the corn market.
That's what's happening in agriculture. I'm Rusty Halverson.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week.